And he's kind of going to ground us after our talks in this symposia today, kind of review and tie things together and explain what his views on, or review, I suppose, of some of the work we've discussed. But anyway, he's a research leader for the Agricultural Systems Research Unit with USDA in Fort Collins, Colorado. His presentation today is on simulation models to explore management effects on crop water productivity.
Thank you, John.
That is
good. So this will work. Yeah. Thank you very much. What an interesting topic. System models to explore management effects on crop water productivity. I'm very pleased and even excited about talking about this subject because, as you will see, models can greatly complement the field research studies. Where field data are extremely important to use the model, but models can take that further, integrate the results, and enhance field research. By the way, my co-authors have been parts of the USDA Ag System Research Unit, except Robert Lascano. He's with ARS at Lubbock, but we made him part of our unit for this study. So. You probably already realized that productivity versus transpiration for a given crop or cultivar is generally not changed by management. Now, previous speakers have indicated that cultivars could have quite a bit effect on productivity-transpiration relationship. In fact, Sean Grayson showed me some data for corn here in Colorado and Fort Collins that shows significant effect of cultivar, different genotypes, different hybrids on crop productivity-transpiration relationship. But by and large, management increases productivity by reducing soil evaporation and other losses, thus increasing transpiration. That increases productivity. The effect will also vary with biomass or green yield as a measure of crop water productivity. Management effect will also depend on weather conditions, weather factors from year to year. So we will need long-term averages to make conclusions about a management practice having an effect. That's where the models will come in. Effect also depends on soil type and scale, so we have to keep that in mind, site-specific. I must say that model needs to be applied with some experimental data, some good experimental data, to explore management effects. To stay on the solid ground. So what we do is we integrate process models of ag systems with good field research results in order to explain and predict field research results and then extend them to long-term weather conditions and to other soils and climates and use extended results then to define management effects on an average basis, and even develop simple decision tools for users. Over the years, our team at Fort Collins has developed what we call the Roots on Water Quality model, a process-level system model, especially to evaluate impacts of management practices on water quantity, water use, water quality, and crop production. It has been applied to evaluate effects of tillage and crop rotations, water and nitrogen management, global climate change, heating of soils and canopy, especially to understand crop water stress and water use, as well as greenhouse gas emissions, most lately, in relation to production. So some recent examples of applications of this model to explore management effects, which is the topic of this symposium. We applied the model to dryland cropping system at Akron, Colorado, in eastern Colorado. to their alternate crop rotation experiments. Here are some results. No-till and rotation effects on crop water productivity. We are showing the yields of wheat, corn, and millet in four different rotations. Wheat fallow conventional till, wheat fallow no-till, wheat corn fallow no-till, and wheat millet. Wheat corn millet no-till. As you can see, both observed and simulated results that no-till definitely was over a number of years gave higher production under the same rainfall conditions of wheat than conventional till. And then, of course, wheat corn fallow, the wheat yield in wheat corn fallow rotation was about the same as just the wheat fallow no-till rotation. And just Dr. Hansen pointed out this morning, by using this strategy, having two crops in 3 years, bringing corn in there, you increase overall productivity. That's a management practice out there. Of course, corn yield is also higher in a wheat-corn fallow rotation than in wheat-corn millet rotation. So you have wheat-corn millet has no fallow period, so this fallow period does help the wheat and corn yield both. Why does the no-till under this situation, at this location, help produce more than conventional till? It's because of the soil moisture. It reduces. It has, under no-till, we have more soil moisture due to the fact that it cuts down evaporation. Here is the effect of soil water at planting. Now, the graphs show cumulative probabilities of grain yield of corn, proso millet, and canola, and forage yields for foxtail millet and triticale over 95 years of weather. So the probability distribution come about from so many different year-to-year variation. And at different levels of plant available water, initial plant available water, from 10, 25, 50, 70, 100%, for different crops. And the effect on corn, proso millet, canola, foxtail millet, and triticale. Now, the purpose of this study was to really identify which summer crop to choose and plant in rotation with wheat in a wheat summer crop fallow rotation based on initial moisture at plant. So with these results, with these probability curves, one can decide, depending on the price of the crop, which crop is best to plant in a wheat summer crop fallow rotation. And based on the prices about 10 years ago when we published these results, we found out that actually forage crops, foxtail millet and triticale, yielded higher net return than the grain crops. But this could change as the prices change. And we also used the model to do some analysis of dryland cropping system at Sydney. Andy, were you part of this, I think? Especially for spring wheat. And with a 50-year simulation, we established that there's no question that continuous spring wheat after spring wheat, is much better annualized yield than spring wheat fallow rotation. And of course, farmers still use, Andy says, still use wheat fallow to some degree? Not much. But saying, anyway, continuous wheat, definitely over long term, is a lot better than wheat fallow rotation in this area. We also showed, and maybe Andy can help me describe, no-till and conventional till, this is a conventional till and this is conventional till ecological management, and no-till. Really, no-till didn't really very help very much compared with conventional till. And ecological management that Andy described this one earlier actually over long term gave lower yield than the conventional management. We also used the model while we were at it over 50 years, what is the most optimal seeding rate for spring wheat, both for conventional management and ecological management, as well as some optimum planting dates for them. So you can go long term. Like I say, it complements the field research. And the alter scenarios for increasing crop water productivity from some limited water available. And this we looked at for Akron conditions, weather conditions, over 94 years of weather. The idea was if you have some water available to supplement the limited, the dry land rainfall effect, How much will you apply during the vegetative growth stage and how much during the reproductive growth stage? And we tried three different ways of doing it. We said 50-50, about the same amount in vegetative stage as the reproductive stage, or 40 during vegetative stage, 60 during reproductive, or 20 during vegetative stage, and 80 for three different soil types that we simulated over 94 years. Division of 20% of available water during vegetative growth period and 80% during reproductive gave us the best result for all three soils. In fact, at much higher levels of application during the vegetative stage, like especially for silt loam and sandy loam soil, actually decrease yield. What do you think so? We related to the fact that it leached the nitrogen. We had a fixed amount of nitrogen and all that. And at a higher level, it actually reduced by leaching of nitrogen and decreased the yield. In clay loam soil, it didn't seem to bother. Another question here shows cumulative probabilities for corn grain yield again over 95 years instead of 94. In response to initiating irrigation at different soil water depletion levels. By that means that you wait, when do you irrigate? You monitor your soil moisture and irrigate when you are down to 10% of plant available water in the soil, in the root zone, or 20 or 30, 40 or 50. And our results, simulation results over very long period show that for silt loam, you really can draw down, you can wait until about 20% of plant available water without affecting the yield probability, over 100 years almost. Now for sandy loam, maybe you can wait, dry down to 30%, not 20%. For clay loam, to 40%. Before the yield probability curve goes to the left, which is lower yields. So that's another idea as to, depending on the soil type, depending on the weather, local weather condition, what is the best way to do that? Of course, the more longer you can wait, the fewer the irrigations and fewer the amount of number of irrigation and the amount of irrigation you apply. So you do save water. Now, a little bit about irrigated crop system at Greeley, Colorado, which is closer to Fort Collins, which is Sean is part of that. And this was an experiment at different levels of irrigation. Irrigation, six different treatments. Irrigation applied it to meet 100% of the ET demand, 85 or 70% of the ET demand. Another treatment with a variable rate, slightly variable rate, 70% ET demand, and 55 and 40. And using these data, we actually used 20 years average, not 95, because we didn't have reliable weather data for that long term at this site. We used 20 years weather data to create a production function, which is grain yield versus amount of water supply, irrigation plus precept. And the The solid curve is 20 years average, and the rest are 4-year experimental data of 2008-2011. It's scattered around that curve. But the results show a very interesting thing, that up to about 70% of ET, when the irrigation meets up to 70% of the ET demand, the slope of the line, which is the marginal groundwater productivity, essentially stays the same. But after 70%, it decreases slope if you apply the function of water supply. Now, when we plot those production functions as a function of ET for three different soils, as a function of ET, it came out fairly straight line. But when you apply the function of irrigation over long-term average, it decreases with time. Why? Because all irrigation water is subject to evaporation, leaching, as well as the fact that soil moisture is not as fully utilized towards T and ET. And we also created some production function for different climatic conditions, different counties in Colorado. And the purpose of those, of course, was besides the subject of today, we fed those production function into the beta version of what we call the Colorado Water Optimizer, which is being used for farmers to kind of decide, plan for deficit irrigation, what crop mixes to grow and at what level to irrigate, which is best for them economically. Okay, we went a step further. We got excited, and Dr. Sasi Annopoulos back in there, who did the study. So you answer all the questions, Sasi. The idea was to see what is the effect of irrigation interval on corn crop water production function that I showed you. And this time I'm planning production as a function of irrigation, and as you can see, for the same amount of total irrigation applying every 3 days gives higher yield than applying 14 days, or 7 or 10 or 14 days. Whether it's applied as expressed as a function of irrigation or total water supply, which is irrigation plus precip, it's about the same results. Why? It indicates to see that perhaps when we use 14-day interval, there are some periods of water stress that affect the yield. Now, when we plant the same data as a function of ET and T, as you can see, as a function of transpiration, the results come very close as they should. And the function of ET is also pretty close. Maybe there's still some differences. Now, we also want to look at effect of initial soil water on corn crop water production functions. And yield as a function of irrigation now at this site. As you can see, at higher initial water content in the root zone of 20 centimeters, the yield is higher than when we have essentially zero initial water content. Obviously, because you're adding that much more water in the soil to irrigation. And this happens especially not at the fully irrigated level, but below fully irrigated level. So below fully irrigated level, if you have soil moisture that supplements the irrigation applied, you're going to get more yield. And when you apply, especially as a function of ET, the differences decrease as they should, especially as a function of transpiration. And this does show that initial water content, higher initial water content, we have more soil evaporation at different levels of ET irrigation. Well, this was a little bit of a surprising and exciting, in a way, finding we had. that there is a strong interaction of nitrogen on the shape of the production function. How much you apply nitrogen changes the shape of the function. So nitrogen has a very strong interaction with water. And even when we express the function of ET, is still persists. So some of you, the earlier speaker presented this nitrogen-water interaction, and we are proving over longer-term weather condition using a model that indeed is very, very important. We need to keep this in mind. And many times, people really just apply a constant amount of nitrogen, assuming it's not limited. And it may not always be true. So we really need to be careful. We need to monitor nitrogen uptake alongside water use in these studies. And this shows that indeed, high initial water content leached more nitrogen than low and medium initial water content, which means there's more deep percolation of water that takes away more nitrogen as well.
Two minutes?
If you want some questions. Oh, okay. A little about growth stage irrigation and water partitioning. This work was done in China, and they had, they tested in their experiment one irrigation applied at different growth stages like initial stem elongation, booting stage, and this is for wheat now, and grain filling stage are two irrigation, and then they are IAS, a different combination of two irrigation at two different growth stages, but different choosing different growth stages and combination. And they found out that, and three irrigation the same way, they found out that with one irrigation, the highest yield, the higher water use efficiency was obtained when irrigation was applied at stem elongation stage. And similarly, when two irrigation, they were supplied by S and B stage, which is the booting stage, and of three irrigation, I think it is, if I can read correctly, that stage, whatever. But anyway, the water use efficiency and maximum yield coincided. Then, you know, in China, they do what was called double cropping, wheat maize rotation. And they found if you have limited irrigation, how much to apply to wheat and how much to apply to maize. And generally they found that if you apply about 80% to wheat and just only 20% to maize, depending on the local precip condition and soil condition, that is the best, gives you the best water use efficiency as well as the best yield. I will skip that because of time. Precision management, I thought this was interesting. Precision management of irrigation timing and recharge levels. Otherwise, if we are able to control when to initiate irrigation, at what level of soil water depletion, and then how much to fill back to field capacity or saturation or less than field capacity. If we could control that in some way, and in this modeling study, that's what we try to do. You have different depletion level at which to irrigate for wheat and corn or maize, and different recharge level as a percent of field capacity. So you could see for wheat, the best yields were obtained about 45% soil water depletion level at which to initiate irrigation, and about 70% recharge level. For maize or corn, it was more like 50 and 70. And beyond that, there was no further advance. So our model results can be a guide towards if you are doing precision management, what is the best level, when to irrigate, when, how much to fill back the root zone. This is important because Dr. Robert Lascano is there. This is Lascano, the national work. They showed that they compare the circular planting versus straight planting in a sloping landscape of Lubbock, Texas, and clearly showed with use of a model now, this is a model application, that indeed the circular planting give more soil moisture on the average than state planting. And of course, you already know the answer why. Because there was less runoff when you do circular planting on a sloping landscape. And I wanted to include this. So this work from Spain by Gomez and Associates. They want to compare tillage versus cover crops in an olive orchard. Olives are, as you know, a very, very important crop there. All in southern Spain and Portugal and Italy, of course, everywhere in the Mediterranean region. And they showed that carefully managed cover crop gave higher yield than tillage to control weeds and things. High olive yield by, of course, the modeling study. Under current climate, which is a control, and under future climate, they also want to see effect of climate change on it at 5 different locations. So cover crop gave better results, properly managed cover crop gave better results for olive yield than tillage, and the reason was that the cover crop decreased runoff and increased, let's go with this one, decreased soil evaporation, increased infiltration. It did increase percolation, but in spite of that, transpiration was increased. This is a difference, by the way, difference over tillage, but transpiration was increased under current climate and under future climate. So this model can be very, very useful complement to good field studies, of course. That's what I want to show. So concluding the remarks, system models can be used to explore management effects and very strongly, greatly complement good field study, cutting-edge field study. What I'm trying to say is we need to really, in this day and age, need to integrate system modeling with good field research. This has been the promise of my 24-year working in the XSM research. I have tried to do that working with you, our colleague experimenter, Jonas. And I want to convey this message that this is the time for us to bring them two together. That integration has the potential to discover new science by synthesis of data across landscapes and locations. So we're not to just stop by one location, go across locations. And raise agriculture science and technology to a higher level, make agriculture more quantitative and predictable. Of course, it's a site-specific management. So we could use that knowledge to devise site-specific management strategies. Thank you very much. I think this was my last slide.